because you won't have a signal anyway. Okay. Are you ready? Okay. So, can we give a warm green melt welcome to Kate Monkhouse?
Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you so much for coming across this beautiful corner of the festival site to have some time together this afternoon. I'm going to be sharing some thoughts about spirituality for the common good. I'm not a theologian, so it'll be a little bit of my reflections from my own journey and a chance for you to reflect also on something from your own experience. I'm going to offer some reflections. There'll be a chance for you to chat with one another. And then we're going to have a prayer, a poem, and some quiet at the end. Is that okay? And I think it's just about 45 minutes, so there won't be time for questions, but I'll hang around outside if anybody wants to give any cheap feedback or ask me questions then. So the talk is going to consider questions such as, why do we need a renewed spirituality to support our world today? What do different traditions have to say about the creative tensions between prayerful reflection and busy activism? How might our prayer guide us to discern how to use our gifts and sustain our engagement? What kind of spiritual practice helps us as we work for social justice? And where might we find joy in the midst of it all and share delight alongside other people that we're working with? Well, before we begin, I'd love to offer just a moment of quiet. Let's just be still for a minute or so. You might want to use the silence to remind yourself of why you chose this theme this afternoon, why it has meaning for you. You might want to spend a couple of moments just breathing after rushing across past the lake to this corner of the campsite. And you might want to settle in and to open your heart to be ready to listen. So, a minute of stillness. Thank you. So why this theme and why now? I am so glad that Greenbelt chose the theme of the common good this year. It seems right that our common concern at this time in the world is goodness for all. In the midst of a world of increasing anxieties and fear, growing divides and inequalities, we need a theme, a narrative that calls us back to our sense of common humanity, a collective sense of who we are together. And it seems that something more might be needed to bring us back again to solve the concerns and challenges that we face, and not just perhaps in relation to social justice. Angie Zolli from the Garrison Institute was talking recently with Douglas E. Christie, the author of Contemplative Ecology. And he suggested that the ecological crisis also reflects something deeper and more intimate, a spiritual crisis, one of perspective, meaning, solidarity and practice. And therein perhaps lies our indictment, but also our hope. In Catholic social teaching, and I'm taking here a helpful explanation from Caritas Australia, the idea of the common good upholds that every person should have access to the goods and resources of society so that they can live fulfilling lives, and the rights of individuals must be balanced with the needs of the disadvantaged and the dispossessed. The common good is reached when we work together to improve the well-being of all in our society and in the world. This idea of the common good is directly linked to the idea that every person, every human person, is created in the image and likeness of God, and therefore has inherent dignity, independent of ethnicity, creed, gender, sexuality, age, or ability, and should not have their freedom compromised. So this means that we have a mandate to work against poverty, against hunger, against misery, against oppression and against injustice. And the ethos of this sense of the common good means that our work for social change should be people-centred, never treating people as objects of charity or recipients of aid, but with empowerment and collaboration at heart. So for those of us who are working for this common good, I believe that we need to resource it from a renewed spirituality. Pope Francis in Evangelii Gaudium says, "Whenever our interior life becomes caught up in its own interests and concerns, there is no longer room for others, no place for the poor. God's voice is no longer heard, and the quiet joy of his love is no longer felt, and the desire to do good fades." We may not consider ourselves activists as such, but we all contribute in our different ways to making the world a better place. And the connections between spirituality and social justice have long been part of my work. And some of you will know that I've often been heard complaining why it's so hard to get activists to come away on retreat, or indeed why it's hard to get wider issues of concern, time and space at the retreat house. And yet I've noticed over the last couple of years a renewed sense of the importance of bringing these two things together, with communities and colleges offering courses on sacred activism. I've heard a recognition among some activist friends of the self-care they need to sustain long-term action. And I've noted trainings on personal resilience for human rights defenders. We've seen, for example, the deep resourcing of the clergy who made witness at Charlottesville, not just in their non-violent civil rights training that they all underwent before the protests, but in their prayerful preparation to stand in the face of fear-filled hate. And closer to home, we know that people of goodwill and people of faith provided much-needed comfort and practical support following the Grenfell Tower tragedy, as trust between communities and policymakers fractured. So it matters not just what we campaign for, but how we do that, whether that's climate protection or housing justice. It doesn't matter who it is that we're serving, the people at our local food bank, the people at our youth centre, but it matters how we do it. I have come on a long journey from my early days of wanting to change the world to where my work is now, and my theology and my spirituality have changed much along the way. I started off with great missionary zeal, imagining that I had something to offer the poor in other countries. And then as a member of a local evangelical church, I was part of efforts to take Jesus to people in other communities, with little humility in myself that God might already be there. Finally, following the burnout and disconnectedness that came with working in political projects, I found escape and rest in the contemplative tradition. But there was something missing as I swung between business and the respite of prayer. I had not yet found a deep integration of my desire to serve the world and the discernment of knowing what I was meant to be doing good. I knew I was doing valuable work, but I wasn't thriving myself. Eventually, I found a reconciliation between my evangelical head and my contemplative heart in the Ignatian Way, the teachings and the spiritual exercises of Saint Ignatius of Loyola. And I was able to reframe this tension into what my Catholic side might describe as an apostolic spirituality, a kind of a missional spirituality. As Jesuit Brian McDermott explains, the fundamental imperatives of the Christian vocation are two in number. Love God with all your heart, mind, and strength, and love your neighbour as yourself. The twofold commandments involve loving in three distinct directions: love of God, love of neighbour, and love of self. Any Christian spirituality must be concerned with these three. And an apostolic spirituality differs somewhat from a contemplative spirituality. The fundamental imperatives of the Christian vocation express themselves in both traditions. An apostolic spirituality views particular moments of prayer as a means to enable the individual, someone growing in intimacy with God, to serve the neighbour more discernment and more fully. So both are important, but for me this particular reframing was very helpful. So the work that I do now is not only just an outworking of prayer, but is deeply nourished by it, collaborating with the God who is already at work in all people and in all places. In this I have found life in all its fullness. Each of us, of course, has to find the way that works for them. And I'm sure each of you could share your own testimony of how you've matured in your own spiritual journey so as to be of better service to others. In particular, I have been transformed by two areas in my work. Accompanying and advocating for asylum seekers made destitute by our government policy, and playing my own part in our reconciliation as LGBT people within the church. Working with refugees has enabled me to love beyond all measure, to be at their service in a wholly disinterested way. And working with issues around sexuality and identity has enabled me to know that I too am loved beyond all measure. Standing up for welcome and inclusion can be tough work, but it has proved to be beautiful and healing. I found it really is true that the place where our heart breaks is where our vocation lies. Theologian Frederick Buchner states, "Our vocation is where our greatest passion meets the world's greatest need." So, what deepest desire or values motivate you to work for the common good? Take a couple of minutes to speak with the person next to you and share as much or as little as you're comfortable to share. We've got about 5 minutes, so make sure you each get time to talk. Thanks. What kind of spirituality do we need as people who are working for the common good? Well, if spirituality concerns the spirit or the soul, our Christian spirituality must also be social, in the sense that our spirituality is incarnational and relational. The God we believe in models mutuality of relationship through the Trinity and through the life of Jesus. So our spirituality might be our prayer. It might be the deep resourcing that we find in community with others. It might be the heritage that we find in the religious tradition of a faith that does justice. And hopefully our starting point might be our lived experience that we are loved by God, and because of the gratitude we feel, we are called to make our world more just. As Jesuit Jerry Conlin articulates, the more that we can live out of this atmosphere of gratitude, the more likely it is that our struggle for justice will persevere for the long haul. Anger and duty on their own may easily lead to burnout. When subsumed by love and trust in our faithful God, we can sustain lifelong engagement. So concretely, this love and trust in a spirituality for the common good can be about three attitudes. Firstly, standing in the tradition of the sacred tradition of the dissenters. The internal work, secondly, of integration of ourselves and souls. And last but not least, wonder. So I name them all here not because I do them well, but because I have failed in each and every area, and yet I now know them to be the most important attitudes that I can adopt. So firstly, standing in the sacred tradition of the dissenters. We need to know the stories of the radicals and the change makers of history, to honour their sacrifices and their witness. You will know the ones you have been inspired by yourself. Let's have a couple of names. Who inspires you as somebody who worked for the common good?
Dorothy Day.
Lovely. She's one of my favourites. Yeah. Who else? William Booth. Wilberforce. Jean Vanier. There was one down here I missed. Francis of Assisi. Albert Schweitzer. Nelson Mandela.
Jesus.
Always good to get him in there somewhere. Martin Luther King. Yeah. St. Benedict. Yeah. They come to mind easily. So knowing what we stand for, as well as who we stand with, means that knowing that we stand on the shoulders of those who have gone before. We can only advocate for the next piece of human freedom because the last piece was hard won. And we need to know the stories from our own communities, not just the famous names, and then pick our role models well. And I'm sure, again, there'll be people that you can think of from your own neighbourhoods, your own workplace, your own faith community that stand out for you as somebody who works tirelessly, quietly for the common good. So we need to do this work in community. Working for the common good is not and cannot be an individual pursuit. We need to make time to be available to support and encourage our fellow activists. And we need to be accountable also for our actions and the way that we work, being ready to hear from others if we are tiring or acting unwisely. We need mentors who have walked similar roads before us and who, even when we're innovating or breaking new ground, will be willing to listen and help us discern. Working for the common good means trespassing limits and being untidy. I don't know if anyone saw recently the images of that was on Twitter of nuns protesting against sexual violence, and they were holding up a sign saying, we're trying to change the world, sorry for the inconvenience. So let's keep speaking up, let's keep having the awkward conversations, challenging our institutions. And even when the work's easy, or just the precious work of caring for others in the everyday, we can take comfort in the knowledge that many have gone before, and indeed many will come after when we're gone. So the internal work. There is a tradition within Buddhism of right action. It's important that we clarify our motivations. What is the change we wish to see in the world? And can we be that change? Or are we acting out of fear or reacting out of misguided concern? Can we root our actions in clarity of purpose and selfless love? Philena Hertz, who's the founder of Gravity in America, Center for Contemplative Activism, links activism to our inner work. She says, through activism, we confront toxicity in our world, but through contemplation, we confront it in ourselves. A profound statement, I think. Yeah, for sure. So Philena Hertz says, through activism, we confront toxicity in our world. So she's saying we call out what is wrong in the world. But through contemplation, we confront it in ourselves. So there's a sort of a mutuality of the work that we do in ourselves through our prayer, through our reflection, which means that we can act out of a sense of purity rather than just critiquing others. I think there's probably more to reflect on in that statement. It can be easy to mix up our identity of people loved by God with the cause that we advocate for. It is important in doing this work that we keep our ego in check and do not get caught up in the hubris of believing that our campaign is more important than others. Anyone ever done that?
I'm guilty, yeah.
That being said, please do, of course, go across to the Greenbelt stalls where all of the different NGOs and causes are represented and pick one that you've never cared about before and make a donation or support them in some way. It's also false, I think, to assume that spirituality is about being peaceful. I no longer think that that is the case. My inner peace as someone working with women for reconciliation is less about the calm moments than the ballast water in the bowel of the ship. It's the robust stability that keeps us on course. And anger can also be an important part of our spiritual practice when we're holding out for peace. Our righteous yearning for justice can be a source of intercession and praise. Not praising for what is wrong, but crying out to the God who is bigger and more almighty than the injustice in front of us. And the rage we feel can also be transfigured through prayer into prophetic words and actions. Siri Hustvedt says that sometimes rage can be a liberating quality because it's connected to the hope that things will be different. And she contrasts it to depression, which is when there's nothing to be done. But she says there is always something to be done. Which leads us back to wonder. Anyone who's been working in the field of peace building or community development for long enough will know those lovely moments, those moments of awe when a breakthrough occurs, when the conflict softens or the bridge to understanding is built. As we are holding out for hope in difficult situations, we're reminded time and time again that we cannot do this in our own strength. In working for the common good, we learn humility along with solidarity. as we take a hard line on human rights and hold out for high standards from our policymakers, let's not harden our hearts towards those that we disagree with. If we soften our stance towards those on the opposing side or those who we perceive to be our enemies, we might indeed be surprised. Surprised by the God of surprises, who just comes in and gently helps a reconciliation or a transformation to break through. Michael Edwards, who writes in Open Democracy, says, "I've always thought so, and not just for personal reasons, although it's certainly more fulfilling and more fun, to live a life that is deep instead of shallow. I think it also matters politically, because spirituality is of enormous importance in the struggle for social change. This may sound odd given the common image of mystics as people who are removed from the world, but I am convinced that the spiritual experience is one of the keys to the radical transformation of society." I love that. And I love the idea that it can be fun as well. I remember lamenting the cost of a church renovation project to the manager of my local refugee centre some years ago, and he told me, "Never underestimate the importance of beauty." And in my own experience, arguing about immigration policy or scripture verses about who is welcome should never be replacements for sharing a meal with a refugee or worshipping with LGBT people denied affirmation in the church. For therein lies the mystery of God's grace, and it is profoundly joyful. As craftivist Sarah Corbett, who's here this weekend at Greenbelt, reminds us, if we want our world to be more beautiful, kind and fair, then shouldn't some of our activism itself be beautiful, kind and fair? So let's pause for another moment of exchange. What helps nourish and sustain you in the work you do for the common good? What helps nourish and sustain you in the work that you do for the common good? Take a couple of minutes to speak with the person next to you, again, as much or as little as you feel comfortable to share. So for this last part, I'd like just to say something about spiritual disciplines. Alistair McIntosh, who's the author with Matt Carmichael of Spiritual Activism, Leadership of Service, reminds us that working with the suffering of the world, we can so easily burn out or sell out. Activist organisations can be dysfunctional and urgently in need of fresh vision. We need to resource our activism from a place of spiritual grounding. So over the years, I've tried to build up my spiritual toolkit to create the kind of foundation that I need for the work that I'm doing. And these spiritual disciplines, in a way, now seem more important to me than all the studies and professional training that I have done. Valerie Brown, who's a lawyer, expresses it better than I can. She says, "During my high-pressure career as a lawyer lobbyist, I believe that effective activism was about a set of competencies that included technical skill, expertise, power, status, and control. I believe that activism was largely about positional authority and superior technical competency. The person at the top of the organisational chart was the leader, and I played by these rules, believing that if I had the right educational degrees, the right skill set, and the right experience, I too could be a successful leader and activist. Today, working primarily with leaders and activists, I've learned a new language of activism. Activism requires self-awareness, emotional intelligence, integrity, and trustworthiness. In the face of complexity, ambiguity, and uncertainty, we are called to be adaptable, to embrace paradox, and to hold unsettled tensions." I find that very helpful. So there are many different spiritual disciplines, and different ones will serve us best at different times. This talk has already mentioned gratitude and contemplation, worship and discernment. Others that we might need to adopt in working for the common good could include keeping a Sabbath, journaling, offering hospitality at regular periods of time, adopting a rule of life. And for my own part, I found the practice of inner listening profoundly important, a time to listen, listen, listen for guidance in the everyday. I also join the community I live with in a regular pattern of prayer when I'm at home, because God knows I find it hard to commit to this by myself. So I'm grateful for the companionship of others. Praying the Psalms is hard, and yet it has given me a steadiness that I never thought possible. I've made a choice to give up alcohol and make regular times for walking in nature or pilgrimage. I know I have more to learn about being faithful in intercessions for people in need and about fasting or living more simply. So is there a new spiritual discipline that you want to adopt when you get back home, or an old discipline that served you well in the past that you could return to? What would help you practically, personally, to sustain your spirit in your own work for the common good? I'll just give you a moment to think for yourself. No need to share this time. And lest we forget, and how could we at Greenbelt, the discipline of joy, the discipline of creativity. This is not about an enforced cheerfulness or being happy when we're tired or busy, but it's about a profound sense of hope and delight in others. Let's campaign artistically. Let's stand steady in our anger and yearning for a better world. Let's do it alongside one another, in community, and rooted deeply in love. So we took a moment at the beginning of this session to listen, to breathe, and to open our hearts to learn. And I'd like to invite you to pause again in quiet before we go. Here's a pattern of prayer, the Examen, I'm sure it'll be familiar to some of you, that can help as a framework in the everyday. I have three short questions for you to reflect on in silence and to help each one of us to take away something that's meaningful and worth holding on to. So being aware of God's presence with us and knowing God's love for us, let's listen. What was it from the words you heard that brought you joy? What gave you fresh insight or energy for the work you do for the common good? What are you excited about going back from Greenbelt to do? And what was challenging or curious to you that you might want to reflect on further? Is there something that you might want to consider more? Take a fresh look at. And what is it that you could do differently over the months ahead? Maybe just one action, attitude, or discipline that would nourish and sustain you. So again, no need to share this time, but just quietly in your heart, if you'd like to, give thanks to God for all that you have received from the words that have been said, what you've heard from one another, and what you've heard in the quietness. So may I offer a poem to close? It's a poem. You can listen and say it as a prayer if you'd like to. This was written by Mary Lou Kaunaki. She's a nun and social activist from America. She says, "Break open our hearts. Break them wide open. Let anger pour through like strong storms, cleansing us of complacency. Let courage pour through, like spring storms, flooding out fear. Let zeal pour through, like a blazing summer sun, filling us with passion. Force of justice, grant me anger at what is, courage to do what must be done, passion to break down the walls of injustice, and build a land flowing with milk and honey. For God's beloved, God's special love, God's poor ones. Spirit of justice, break open our hearts." So let's go then in peace to love and serve the Lord and all that we accompany. Amen.
Amen.
So as this session was quite short, I've put a collection of some of the quotes that I mentioned together. They're on a sheet just over here. There's a few of them. So if you don't manage to get one, please share or come and give me your email address, and I'm really happy to email them out to you afterwards. Thank you so much. Have a great weekend and enjoy the rest of the festival.